powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, former Seahawk, current NFL and NCAA analyst Robert Turbin. Hey, Turbo, happy Friday. How's it going?
Hey, happy Friday. It's going good. Just getting ready to get my little midday pump in, you know, get right for the weekend. No
there
ditty.
We go. I feel like this becomes like the health show where you and I talk about meal prepping and then Bump just makes fun of you. And but I want to know, yeah. I send only love. Love and support.
It's all love. It's all love. We're just trying to get Bump to get rid of the nachos and everything like that. You know what I mean?
Nachos?
Gotta get those out of the diet, man. The cheese.
Never.
You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely not.
You can't part ways with it. You know what I'm doing? I'm being messy. I'm already stirring up a little bit of animosity.
You tease that you're going to start beef.
This is what I'm going to do right now. So, Bump thinks, Turbo, that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not actually the best wide receiver in this class. He says it's Rome Odunze. Do you agree or disagree with Bump?
I disagree. Bump just being a homer, man. What school did I go to?
What school I go to?
I mean, I know you went to State.
You know I got no love for them over there. You know I got no love.
But it's still Washington. It's still Seattle, though. You got clear love for Seattle. That's where you work, do all your business. That's what you played for, okay? So I get the love. But there's no doubt, man, that Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best wide receiver in the draft. Now, Rome Odunze, you know, is a close second. You know, like, if Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't there, he's certainly the next guy that I would pick because I think he's the most consistent. I think he's the more, the more pure wide receiver, in the draft compared to some of the other guys like Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr., both those guys being out of LSU, man. But Marvin Harrison Jr. brings the total package. He's got the athleticism, the speed, and, you know, just the catch radius is out of control. So, you know, I get the love for Rome Odunze because I got a lot of love for him, too, watching him on tape and things of that nature. But it's Marvin Harrison Jr. if I had to rank him 1 and 2.
Well, I still love you, man. Agree to disagree, Turbo. I still love you, though, man. Hey, there's some change going on over there at VMAC, man. You got pictures of your squad being taken down. You got Uchenna saying it's a breath of fresh air, man. People are assuming a lot about those two situations. What are your thoughts, and how do you feel about the whole Uchenna and the pitchers being taken down?
Well, I'll start with Uchenna and, you know, I guess the comments he made about the breath of fresh air. You know, it'd be nice for him to be able to come out and really clarify, you know, what those comments were gearing towards or things of that nature. But anytime you are coming off of a, you know, I guess of a somewhat struggling season, and, you know, you make change, it always feels like a breath of fresh air because, you know, you're starting anew. So then there's this, you know, it just brings, you know, new optimism, you know, regardless of whether or not the guy coming in or whatever changes are being made are quality changes or if a person is really qualified for the position or not. I think that there's a level of I think that there's a space where, you know, defensive players may have been a little bit disgruntled on, you know, some of the game planning and some of the scheme. When I was at the facility and I was in the locker room and I was around some of the guys and things of that nature, you could hear some of the grumblings specifically from defensive players about the miscommunications, you know, about some of the schemes that they were doing and not feeling like they were being put in the best position to be successful. And so when Uchenna is talking about a breath of fresh air, I feel that that is what he's talking about more as opposed to maybe aiming it at Pete or a specific, you know, individual. Maybe that falls more on, you know, the defensive coordinator and whoever was controlling, you know, those play calls and things of that nature. And then for your second question, the second piece as it pertains to change and all the pictures and things of that nature being ripped down, I'm kind of on the fence with that because I get change. Change is good. Change is inevitable, right? The only thing constant in this world is change. You bring in a new head coach, new general manager, whatever the case may be, there's certainly going to be changes. But then there's a space where there is tradition and there is history. And we were able to, you know, Pete and during his time, there were opportunities where history was created. First Super Bowl in the history of the franchise. And so you don't want to just, you know, get rid of those memories just because you got a new guy. Matt LaFleur isn't in Green Bay getting rid of pictures of Bart Starr and Brett Favre because he's there. You know, I played for Dallas. There, you know, you still see Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman. They may not be spread across everywhere, but they're still there because at the end of the day, it's still the Dallas Cowboys. It's still the team. It's still the franchise. And they have a great history and tradition. I'm sure if you go to Pittsburgh, I've never been there, but I'm sure you'll still see the Staubachs and things of that nature, the Franco Harrises of the world that are still around the facility. It's not about, you know, getting rid of the past, but more so, hey, this is an inspiration. And also, you know, this is what we represent as a franchise. So hopefully there's a plan to still be able to keep some of those things up somewhere. If not, Bump, that would be a little bit disappointing because essentially that would feel like, I'm just saying, it would feel like you're trying to just erase the history and the tradition that was created that is now the Seattle Seahawks that's going to last forever. And so I get the newness and the change and things of that nature, but I think it's important to be able to stay grounded and understanding, like, yo, this is, you know, this franchise now has some new history that's going to last forever. And those people that were a part of it should remain around the facility in some realm.
Yeah, and there are still the pictures and a bunch of memorabilia all around the facility of the Super Bowl team, of everyone. It's just like this area outside the auditorium. But you're not wrong in that it's become a very controversial thing with some people going, I don't know, I wouldn't have done it if I was me. You know, I think history is important. And other people, including me, to be totally blunt with you, have said, well, if I was a new player and I'm completely unconnected to these guys who won a Super Bowl and I don't know anyone from this team and I wasn't part of that team, now I want my picture up there. Like, you know, the message being that, like, hey, this is a blank wall. What are you going to prove? These guys were up here for a decade. What are you going to do now? And I guess that's the way I saw it. Can you see, like, that angle of it? Or is it just not necessarily the approach you would take if you were a head coach?
Oh, I can definitely see that angle of it, for sure. 100%. Because, you know, it like I said, when you see those old photos and things of that nature, it serves as inspiration, motivation, like, hey, I want my picture up on the wall, or my name, mm-hmm. you know, up on the wall, or maybe someday when I'm done playing football, I can be, you know, on the Ring of Honor and things of that nature. So I certainly see it from that standpoint. I just wouldn't want the history to be completely eliminated.
Right.
Yeah. And it's going to be hanging around. And, you know, we talk about all these other teams and, you know, you talked about Dallas and what they have going on. Their tradition and winning is so deep, even though Dallas ain't done jack squat in like 30 years before then.
But they were great before then.
Before then, they were nice. You know, regular season.
The uniforms are nice.
Regular season, they nice. Prime time, okay. But, yeah, they just don't have the tradition. So, you know, I guess I get what
I
he's doing. But,
in.
Yeah, you got. I got to get a shot at Dallas whenever I can.
Why? But,
because I'm there's only a few teams I hate on, Turbo. Dallas, New England, Boston, Astros. Everybody else I'm cool with. But you know
Boston, those, who? Celtics,
Boston
or
Celtics,
Red Sox?
All day. Both, all of Boston. Oh, the whole region.
Especially the Celtics.
Oh my God.
The whole region. What you mean? You from the Bay. You supporting Boston?
Yeah, I ain't hating.
What's a team you hate, Turbo? Turbo, tell us a team you hate.
Well, back in the day, it was the Patriots. I'm not gonna lie, but then I had to grow. I had to get some respect for
That's
Tom Brady and what they were doing. But I, you know, there's not a team. There's I can't think of a team nowadays that I truly. You know what, Bump? You're gonna laugh. It might be the Celtics. It's something about the Celtics. You know what it is?
Full
you know
circle.
What it is? It, it, it's how they did Isaiah Thomas, bro. I'm not gonna lie.
I feel that.
Ever since then, I haven't rocked with the Celtics to say. But other than that, man, I'm cool. I'm cool with franchises.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Man. So let's get back to the draft. You were playing ball in an era where the running back position was valued. Now last year you did have a number 8 overall pick in Bijan Robinson, but teams are reluctant to go the running back route, and we're hearing that Rashad Penny took a visit to Seattle, and who knows what happens there. If you are the Seahawks, you got Ken Walker, you got Zach Charbonnet on your roster. McIntosh is there as well, even though we haven't seen much of him. Would you entertain bringing Rashad Penny back, or would you look in this draft and try to find a young bull?
I'd probably look in the draft. I mean, no disrespect to Rashad. I mean, I would love for him to get another opportunity. I started to get more opportunities last season in Philly, particularly because of how he finished the season the year before, in Seattle. Very strong finish. And so there's no doubt that he's capable. I think that the benefit for Seattle bringing in Rashad would be, his experience. He's a guy that when he was with Seattle, it really didn't matter whether he was coming off an injury or if he hadn't played. It just felt like he was always ready when his number was called. And that's a testament to not only who he is, but like his preparation and his understanding of the game and his study habits and things of that nature. And so, that is a guy that you can see. All the guys in the running back room are relatively young guys still. I think even though K-9 is like a veteran now, there's still a space where there's some learning, that can be had, similarly to his first year when he was with Rashad Penny. So Rashad can kind of come in and he'll be ready to play if his number is called, but also serve as kind of like that big brother amongst the three guys that are in there, because that doesn't really exist in the running back room right now. You know what I'm saying? And so there's that mentorship that he can provide as opposed to going and drafting another young player.
Now, Turbo, it doesn't have to be anything about the Seahawks, but what are you most curious about come Thursday, round one of the draft? Like, what's the storyline or player where you're like, let's see what happens here?
You know what? I think, and I hate to go quarterback. There's two players that I'm really curious about and where they're going to go. It's J.J. McCarthy, because he's getting, I can't believe how much hype. I mean, I'm not trying to hate on the kid, because I want everybody to do well, but dang, I mean, they talk about this, J.J. McCarthy all of a sudden has gotten to the conversation as like one of the top quarterbacks in the draft, and it's crazy because the best quarterback in the draft is clearly Michael Penix Jr., and they don't even talk about him as a first-round pick talent or anything. I know that the scouts, they've been doing this for years. Mel Kiper and these guys, they're professional. They've been doing this. They've been doing this longer than I've been alive. And sometimes I'm just like, I don't even understand the scouting process of and where they put some players. You got J.J. McCarthy graded higher than Michael Penix Jr. Mm. Not on Mars or any planet. So anyway, I'm interested to see where he goes. I'm interested to see where Brock Bowers goes, because he's a top 10 talent, but I can see him getting out of the top 10 and or 15 because there's not a lot of tight end needs. And so it'll be interesting to see where he goes. And then I just think the Vikings as a team, we know that they signed Sam Darnold, but it'll be really interesting to see. Will they trade up? Will they get aggressive? Same thing with the Raiders. Vikings and Raiders.
Yeah.
Will they kind of trade up? What are they going to do as far as maybe getting aggressive as it pertains to the quarterback spot? So those are the three or four things I'm looking at in the draft. Man,
agree on all counts. In fact, I just saw a mock that had the Vikings trading up to 5 and taking J.J. McCarthy, a combination of all worlds. He is Robert Turbin, kind enough to join us on this Friday. All right, Turbo, go hit the gym. Have a good workout. Get those gains, my friend.
Turbo.
All right, peace.
See ya. Before we get to headline rewrites, you raised an eyebrow because both you and I agree on Michael Penix, and it was a good take from Turbo. I mean, he was making it funny and lighthearted, being like, on what planet is J.J. McCarthy or any of these guys considered wildly a better prospect than Michael Penix? But, I mean, we looked at a draft this morning that had Bo Nix going ahead of Michael Penix.
Yeah.
And it's not by guys who don't know anything. It's by guys who are good at scouting, they're good at watching film, but, like, it feels like this unanimous thing that, oh, Michael Penix is great. I got minimum 4 quarterbacks ahead of him.
You know what's wild is Bo Nix and Michael Penix are the most experienced quarterbacks in this draft, yet no one's really rocking with them. You look at the 1 year that Jaden Daniels had. Caleb Williams is a Heisman. You don't ignore that. I would take Penix over Drake May and J.J. McCarthy, and I throw Bo into the mix, maybe not over both of them, but he'd be there. It's crazy how these two are being disrespected, and they've done nothing but win over the past couple of years. It makes no sense to me. You talk about the struggles that young quarterbacks have when they get into the NFL, lack of reps. I look at Jaden Daniels, I go, you got 1 good year of football. Mm-hmm. Yes, you won the Heisman, big ups to you. Bam, one of the better players, best players in the country for sure. But when it comes down to it, quarterbacks, they either sink or swim fairly quickly. And a lot of times they sink because they're put in poor or horrible situations, or they're just not physically and mentally mature enough to get it done. You look at Bo Nix and Michael Penix, they are physically and mentally mature, the most out of this draft. So to see some of these younger guys go ahead of them, 2 of them I understand because of their accolades. The other ones, it's just disrespectful that they're not even being mentioned.
It's almost like they're being punished for their experience, and I don't want to be naive and pretend that there's not major injury concerns. I mean, Michael Penix had 4 of his 6 college football seasons end with season-ending surgery. 2 AC injuries on either shoulder, and then obviously a torn ACL both times in his right knee. That's notable. There are real injury concerns, but he also put together 2 healthy seasons at Washington and proved that when he's healthy, he's absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I completely understand with the health grade. I don't think the left-handed thing is worth it, but I get it.
I get it. What they're saying, I could pick out something for every quarterback. Drake May is sporadic. He is not a very accurate quarterback. J.J. McCarthy wasn't asked to do a lot. Hand the football off, throw it during play action, get protected by one of the best defenses in all the country. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, just be fair, guys.
Yeah.
Be fair.
Jaden Daniels had 327 attempts, 3,800 yards. It's not like a bad season at all. The 40 touchdowns, obviously an amazing rusher. He was doing amazing things. He's your Heisman winner, and it makes sense. But we've also seen a million examples of guys that take off for 1 year, they have amazing seasons, and then it falls through because you didn't see everything that you needed to.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't have a good defense. The defense was the problem with that team, but he had great weapons on offense.
Yeah.
More than arguably Drake May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's preference, man. You know what I'm hoping? I'm hoping that some team just rolls the dice and takes a risk. If we learned anything last year, is that the popular narrative doesn't always work out. Bryce Young, right? Popular narrative. He's a clear number one pick. He should be good to go. Why has he struggled over there in Carolina? Because he's been put in such a poor situation over there. No weapons around him. That factors into that. So when you look at these guys who have the potential to go, Caleb Williams is going to be the number one pick. In 3 years, we could be talking about Caleb Williams being a bust because he went to garbage Chicago Bears organization that does nothing when it comes to developing. Same thing with Jaden Daniels. So you know what? I'm going to retract something. I'm going to say it's better that these young men, Michael Penix and Bo Nix, aren't talked about going in the top 3 picks, because those first 2 picks, in a few years, they have the potential just to be viewed as washed, because those situations in Washington and Chicago have not been good for a very long time. So if you're New England, I think that's a better, more stable situation. I'm even looking at the Giants as a more stable situation. So kind of like when I didn't get drafted, the only plus about me not being drafted is I got to pick where I wanted to go and put myself in a position, me and my agent, to where I felt like I can succeed. Now, there obviously these guys are going to be drafted, but you look at those first two picks, the money's going to be good, the opportunity's going to be good, but do you trust in those organizations in Chicago and Washington to develop a quarterback properly and give them the opportunity to succeed?
And Chicago has an option with number 9, assuming they don't trade back, to immediately, let's say Roma Dunze falls there, immediately give Caleb Williams a great offensive weapon. Mm-hmm. This is also a team that's many pieces away. The number 1 pick is theirs because of the Panthers. It's not their original pick. They're still not a great team. They did not make the playoffs. They are in trouble. I mean, honestly, C.J. Stroud went to a great situation in Houston because they were bad for so long that they racked up a ton of talent, and also D'Amico Ryans turned out to be an amazing coach.
And what they did in that draft last year with those picks, flipping that, turning that into that, and flipping that, making I mean, they worked the draft, and then you got new leadership over there.
Yes.
That's what I think that's what probably gives Chicago and Washington, you give them some benefit of the doubt, is that the leadership has changed over there drastically, especially with the Washington Commanders, right? You got new ownership, you got a new head coach. With Chicago, some things have changed over there, not a lot. That's what you have to lean on. But there's nothing in me that says that Chicago is going to develop Caleb. There's nothing that tells me that Jaden's going to be developing with the Washington Commanders. It's just, you know, we shall see.
I scrapped headline rewrites since it's too late, so we'll spend 3 more minutes on this topic. But I wanted to incorporate some listener feedback. Tell me what you think. From the 206, I agree with you guys about Michael Penix, but one thing that can be said about him I haven't heard you say is that he also played with a ton of offensive talent. He supposedly had the best offensive line in football, a collection of the greatest receivers we've ever seen. So maybe don't bash on the Michigan quarterback for having a good surrounding cast. Now, I'm not bashing him. No one's bashing on J.J. McCarthy for having a good surrounding cast. Though I would say the defense was better than the offense.
Defense was better. Talk about talent. Jaden Daniels, 2 of his teammates are going to be drafted in the top 15. Talking Neighbors and maybe Brian Thomas. He may be late second round, but he has 2 receivers. People don't talk about how good Neighbors is. Neighbors, all the good receivers that have come out of LSU as of late. You got, say, Odell Beckham. You got Jamar Chase. You got Justin Jefferson. His numbers are better than all of those guys. He is the best receiver to ever come out of LSU. No one really talks about that. So, yeah, I understand. And football's a team sport, right? You need talent to surrounding your quarterback to have a chance to win on every single level. So, no, these guys wouldn't even be mentioned. I guess the one guy who's being mentioned and didn't have a lot of talent around him, and maybe that's why he's getting more love, is Drake May. Because I haven't gone deep into North Carolina's football roster, but he didn't have the talent around him that the other guys did.
Yeah, I think I understand the idea of like, oh, he's got a receiver that's going to go top 10. You know, he's got an offensive lineman that's going to go top 15, you know, maybe not top 10, but he's got an offensive lineman and a wide receiver who are going to go early in the first round. But when you spoke about Washington's offense heading into the national title game, when you talked about Michigan and Washington, what was the name that what was the name we said for Washington, the name that matters the most? Michael Penix Jr.
Right.
So ultimately, the 430 yards in the Sugar Bowl, like, yeah, maybe they lose that game. You know, they were a batted pass away from losing. But he was still so integral to their success for the season. Like, this is not just a byproduct of having great weapons. It's making the most of those weapons.
If Penix didn't have a good game, UW doesn't win.
No.
Or you get a nail-biter against Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if J.J. didn't have a good game, don't worry. Hand it off to Blake Carum. I believe that's his name.
Yep,
and then
or something. He's going to be
that
good.
That defense is going to take care of you.
Yeah, I love this conversation. And someone said, well, Rashad Penny was in school for 4 years, and he was really productive. And I think with quarterbacks, it is different. There's a wear and tear that your body takes. Granted, you could say the same thing for Derrick Henry, and then he came up here and just became one of the best we've ever seen, so it's not always consistent. But I don't know. It's one that I'm sure
but
we'll keep going.
To close it out, all the quarterbacks we mentioned are deserving to be in these conversations. We're not saying kick this guy out, and we're critiquing, but all these young men are deserving of this opportunity.
Funny you mentioned that. The agent of one of these top quarterbacks was apparently unhappy with a recent visit he took. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Taking a look around the NFL, we are going to start talking about those top quarterbacks again. If you guys remember, there was a story last week about a number of top quarterbacks. I don't think it included Caleb Williams, who everyone knows is going to Chicago. But it did include Jaden Daniels and Drake May, JJ visiting the Washington Commanders all at once. This is not a traditional visit for any top 30 visit, but especially not for your potential franchise star. I heard Brock and Salk talking about it, and they made some fair points, Bump, about like, well, maybe you want to see how they are in a group with other alphas and see like who's the leader, who like whatever. Who I don't know. I don't understand. But it turns out that Jaden Daniels, who is one of those players, his agent, Ron Butler of Agency One Sports, may not have been very pleased with the fact that his player went on a visit that included multiple other top quarterbacks. This is Adam Schefter from Get Up this morning.
Seemed to go over too well with the agent for Jaden Daniels, Ron Butler, who sounded off on social media last night that he didn't seem particularly pleased with the process. I think Jaden Daniels thought it would be a visit with just him, meeting with the Commanders. Many people think that Jaden Daniels will wind up being the number two overall pick, but the Commanders essentially opened up the process.
Ron Butler liked the following two tweets. One from @DrakeMayMVP said, Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk bashes the Commanders for bringing in four QB prospects all at once rather than individually. Another one, radio edit, is how many companies do this? Put them around their peers, bring players from the team along and see how they interact. Who the heck cares how they interact with players they'll never play with? This doesn't make sense to me.
Again, another reason why my faith in the Commanders is never very high, because they do stuff like this. Like, what are you doing? Whoever you bring in, especially at the quarterback position, you have the number two pick in the draft, okay? You want them to have your undivided attention and vice versa. You don't want, now I heard that they were in different parts of the building at the same time, but you think Jaden didn't walk by and see Drake maybe like, what up, dog? You know, like, come on, man. You can't date all four at one time. Take your time. Bring them in at separate days, maybe even different hours throughout the day. The first 4 hours is this guy, second 4 hours is that guy. The Commanders continue to do commander type things.
I thought the news was weird when we heard it. It was last week, right? Earlier this week.
Yeah.
I thought the news was weird when we heard it for the first time. It doesn't matter what I think about it. It does matter what Jaden Daniels' agent thinks. So anyways, that's the update this morning. His agent, Ron Butler, may be not happy about that one. Next story here, former Colts GM Bill Tobin passed away today at the age of 83. He's most known for ripping Mel Kiper on ESPN's 1994 NFL draft coverage.
One question, Bill. A lot of criticism about not taking a quarterback here. Your response?
Well, you know, we got a guy up there. Who in the hell is Mel Kiper, in a way? I mean, here's a guy that criticizes everybody, whoever they take. He's got the answers to who you should take and who you shouldn't take. In my knowledge of him, he's never ever put on a jock strap. He's never been a coach. He's never been a scout. He's never been an administrator. And all of a sudden, he's an expert. He's in our papers 2 days ago telling us who we have to take. We don't have to take anybody that Mel Kiper says we have to take. Mel Kiper has no more credentials to do what he's doing than my neighbor, and my neighbor's a postman, and he doesn't even have season tickets to the NFL.
A great, objectively good response.
Oh, 1994, man.
A different time. A different time. Era.
Just the whole approach is different.
You know what I mean?
Who the heck is Mel Kiper? He's never
People
put on a jock strap.
Fiery.
No one's ever put on a jock strap. I love that, man. Nowadays, I mean, everyone's an expert. Everyone has an opinion.
Yeah.
And you kind of just roll with it because that's the world we live in.
Yeah.
But back then, could you imagine Bill sitting there and being like, I don't even know who this guy is, Mel Kiper?
I'll say this. I do not think I genuinely know more about the Seahawks' needs than does John Schneider. I do think there are people out there. I don't think Mel Kiper's one of them. I do think there are people out there who genuinely think, I know more and I should be the GM.
Dummies.
I'm just saying.
Trust me, you don't know more than John.
Now, Mel Kiper is not one of those people, but Tobin wasn't wrong at the time that, like, there are some people that are like, yeah, here's what you should have done. You're an idiot for not doing that. And it's like, well, there's all this stuff that you just don't understand. Not that GMs can't make mistakes. In his defense, Kiper had a very classy tweet today following Tobin's passing. He said, a sad day with the passing of Bill Tobin, an accomplished front office executive who made the NFL a better league during his decorated career. Kim and I send our sincerest apologies to his family and loved ones.
Apologies? Condolences.
Did I say apologies?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, I thought he said that. I wasn't saying you got it wrong. I thought he said that.
Send our sincerest condolences to his family and loved
ones. I was like, what is he apologizing
for? Yeah, he's like, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry for 94. I got him all riled up. Okay.
But it was a good response by Mel. What would have been a viral moment had it happened now. Still a famous moment, but... let's see. Our next story concerns Taylor Swift. I apologize in advance, but I don't. Did Taylor Swift take a shot at the Chiefs group of wide receivers on her new album? That's a fan theory going around on X.com. From her song, The Alchemy, the chorus is such. So when I touch down, call the amateurs and cut them from the team. Ditch the clowns, get the crown. I don't think so.
Is this what fans felt like when Beyonce was everywhere? Because... respect to Taylor, she does her thing, but I'm all tailored out, man. I could go a couple months without seeing a commercial. I was driving to work this morning, Sirius XM, Channel 13, Taylor's
Way. They were talking about Taylor?
It's going to be Taylor for like a week. I'm like, I'm exhausted. Taylor, good luck. I heard your album is a banger if you listen to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All these theories going out there. I'm tailored out.
I don't think it's about the Chiefs wide receivers. However, I do think Taylor Swift is not afraid to take shots and make things personal with her lyrics, which like every artist does. She talks about it.
She does it more like just bluntly.
Yeah, that's
like
the
everyone
thing.
Else
she
throws
makes it very
metaphors
clear.
And bars and
or
stuff.
Be like,
she's
maybe
like,
it was about them or
she's
not.
She's like, nah, he took me on a date. It was whack. I don't like him. Next song.
I think Taylor, I feel split on Taylor Swift. I think she gets an undue amount of hate. She got an undue amount of hate from a lot of NFL fans when she was dating Travis Kelce and making absolutely no decision whether or not she was on the big screen. However, sometimes her songs talk about feuds that are a little old.
That's all her songs talk about.
I'm just saying, Taylor.
You know, but you know, I give her some love too, man, because
I like
hip hop, and hip hop talks about the same stuff all the time.
Very true. And I'm not trying to, you know, I don't need Swifties up in my mentions. They scare me, so I will not say anything else. Next up, Dan Campbell reportedly lobbied Lions president Rod Wood to bring back the team's black jerseys that Campbell wore during his time for Detroit. Wood told Campbell they would bring them back if they ever won the NFC North. Lo and behold.
Fire. I tagged you last night.
So he got them as a reward for winning the North. I didn't realize that. I have to admit, the pants and the helmet make it look pretty good.
Yeah. Curtis didn't like them, though.
You did?
Curtis didn't like them.
Once you saw the full uniform, why not?
The blue
helmets
looked like highlighter blue.
But that's what I like about it.
I don't like that.
I think that, again, like I said yesterday, and I will not back down from this, most colors don't look good with black, also without clear borders. Like if it's just like a... here's blue that we slapped onto the back of a black jersey, and you're like, where? Like, it's just like the contrast is weird. I didn't mind the contrast with this because it was so bright.
See, I didn't mind the jersey. We're opposite in this. I like the jersey, didn't like the pants in the helmet, but
yeah,
you like the pants in the helmet.
It made me like the jersey more. Either way, I love that there was a wager of any kind where Dan Campbell was like, can I do this? And he was told, well, win the North, and then you can.
Got you.
Yeah, no problem. Not a problem at all. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. John Schneider explains why the VMAC got a makeover. Plus, we're going to hear what the Seahawks should do at pick number 16 from one NFL draft analyst. Don't go anywhere.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Very quickly before we jump to our Seahawks conversation, I forgot to give an update from a listener, from our reporter in the field. The Colorado Rockies opening up a series today against the Seattle Mariners. I don't know why I said it that way. The Mariners are on the road against the Rockies. It's like 39 degrees in Denver, and there's snow forecasted for the weekend, particularly tomorrow, but it may also be today. So we're kind of keeping an eye out to see if this game is postponed. From the 720, which is in Colorado, I live in Denver now. It's already snowing and 39 degrees, and then they threw in Go Mariners. So just something to keep an eye out for. Again, first pitch is scheduled for 5:40. We'll find out more during the pregame show at 4:30.
Every ballpark,
just keep an eye out.
Unless we're talking about where the Cubs play, maybe Yankees, like the Blue Bloods, every ballpark should have a retractable roof by now.
Yeah.
Like, because come on now. Come on.
You know what's annoying is that these three games against Colorado are the only three games in the month of April the Mariners playing that don't have a roof over their heads.
See?
Like, just their luck.
And look what's happening. Exactly. Just their luck that Denver is going to be having not a snowstorm, just some snow forecasted for the weekend, but it's freezing.
Yeah, throw a roof in there. Boston, no roof. You know, like the old school blue bloods, leave them.
Well, and I'm wondering, like, I mean, we asked Shannon this, but, like, if there's snow in the forecast for tomorrow and the game is postponed today, what if you can't? What if you just can't play the series?
Yeah, you're going to have to make it up on an off day or something like that.
I know, which is the worst. It's literally like a snow day. So anyways, that was an update from a listener. We are not talking about the Mariners here. We're talking about the Seahawks, in particular what John Schneider had to say about why the VMAC got a little bit of a makeover. I do think this has all been taken out of context and has all been turned into a lot. Now, I think that it's because the story, to me, is interesting. A head coach comes in and says, hey, we're starting fresh. This is a new regime. And I like that approach. John Schneider explained why banners and pictures were taken down. It's only outside of the auditorium in the hallway. There's still plenty of memorabilia all around the building. He said, look, we're going digital. You know, they're kind of like falling off. We're going to put up, I'm assuming, like big screens, like digital screens where maybe they can rotate pictures in and out. But then also there's this other part of it that kind of makes it clear that, like, this is an era where you have to build up your own legacy. This is the part I didn't play. It's John talking about the positive feedback he got from players.
And so I think the players really embraced it. And, you know, listening to Leo the other day, you know, said it great. Like, hey, we're totally going to respect the past and everything that's happened here. And, you know, we got to just got to move forward. You know, it's a young franchise, 1976.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're in those other franchises, like, there's areas that, you know, they have a kind of a Hall of Fame area or, and then they're celebrating. They're kind of building their own story as they go. I think we did it with Coach McCarthy in Green Bay too. Like, hey, this is a special area. Let's build our own history, and that's basically it.
Nothing wrong with this whatsoever. A bump I was seeing listeners text in this morning saying you're disrespecting history. Not a lot of listeners, but I think there are a handful of people who just disagree.
No, they don't understand that not everything is gone. It's just the main walkways where these players, there are two hallways where there's heavy traffic of players, actually three. There's one leading to the practice facility. Mm-hmm. There's one in between the indoor facility and the weight room. There's mm-hmm. one around the corner that kind of leads to their parking lot. It's really not that much of a area where they're taking these pictures down. Everywhere upstairs and in other spots, of course, you're going to have your trophies and your pictures or whatnot. It's just trying not to live in the past without completely erasing it and showing disrespect to it. And I think this is the way that you do it. You change things up in the areas where there's the most foot traffic with these players.
Yeah, and then you get into more of a philosophical debate about what inspires a player. We had Robert Turbin, who was a part of one of those teams, who talked about, you know, like whether or not that can serve as inspiration when those pictures are up.
Matt LaFleur isn't in Green Bay getting rid of pictures of Bart Starr and Brett Favre. I played for Dallas. You still see Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman. They may not be spread across everywhere, but they're still there because at the end of the day, it's still the Dallas Cowboys. It's still the team. It's still the franchise. And they have a great history and tradition. I'm sure if you go to Pittsburgh, I've never been there, but I'm sure you'll still see the Franco Harrises of the world that are still around the facility. It's not about getting rid of the past, but more so, hey, this is an inspiration. And also, this is what we represent as a franchise.
What do you think of Turbo's argument? And I'll also add on that he said, look, a big part of that is that this is all the history the Seahawks have. Like, yeah, there have been lots of great players, but there's one Super Bowl win, and it was this.
Yeah, he makes a great point. I mean, he's right. I'm sure when you go to Green Bay, you go to Dallas, go to these other facilities, you have all of these pitches up. But it's just a different type of situation. Those teams have had decades of winning, and you are not trying, you're not following any coach that goes to any of those organizations. You know what you're following, you know what you're up against, and the expectations are a bit different. With this one, it just seems like because it's such a young franchise and because you haven't had the sustained success that some of these places have had, mm-hmm. always knocked the Cowboys, been a while since y'all been to the Super Bowl, but they did so much before that and during that time that they're a national brand. And I think the Seahawks are a national brand in some ways because people think of them and think of a Pete Carroll and Legion of Boom or something. But it's just not as rich. The tradition is not as rich as those other places. So I think that taking those pictures down don't hit as much as it would if you take down Emmitt Smith or you take down Brett Favre. So I agree with a lot of what Turbo said. I think he's on point, but I also think because of the newness of this organization, if you want to call this new, that, you know, you can move a bit differently. It ain't, they're not one of the storied franchises like those other spots.
Well, and the reason that it's even a story is that it's a new head coach and it has been 14 years since Seattle's had that. Like, I have seen a few people say, like, why is this even news? They took pictures down. I don't know why this is a story. And I will tell you, I can understand that angle. Like, why is anyone talking about this? Who cares? But the reason it became a story is because fans, Seahawks fans, particularly Pacific Northwest fans, fans anywhere, I would argue, incredibly protective of your history and incredibly proud of your history. And you have someone coming in. You haven't had a new head coach for this team in the better part of 15 years. So you haven't gone through the changes that some other organizations have. You're going from the oldest head coach who had a huge connection with the community, who brought you the most successful stretch of Seahawks teams that you have ever seen. And now you have a coach that brings you the unknown, that's 36 years old, who hasn't proven anything. And I think there is an apprehension about whether he's going to have the answers. I think there's a sadness that Pete Carroll is gone. I think that there is a defensiveness about one of the best teams that this town has seen and all the memories and love tied to that. The reason I like it is because it's like, well, what's next? Like, this team won a Super Bowl more than 10 years ago, and I will never forget that. And I remember watching it, and it was so much fun. But what's this group going to do? No one's left.
You run out of wall space when you win multiple Super Bowls, and then you just got to try to deal with it. You said it right there. Having won multiple Super Bowls, so there's room. There's room for more more memories to be built and developed and all that. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a huge deal, I don't think, but it's the symbolism of it that I think can kind of make people feel a certain way.
Yeah, someone said they took three pictures in one place and everyone's blowing it out of proportion. I do think the people that say you're disrespecting history are blowing it out of proportion. But again, the reason it's a debate is because it's one of what is a new regime going to prove and how do you balance respecting your own history and your past with wanting something new? That's a conversation every team has anytime they get a new head coach, and I think it's just one Seattle's learning to have. It's fascinating. Okay, we are going to talk draft with NFL Network draft analyst Chad Ryder next.